It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
High fly ball, deep left field. Upton back at the fence. We'll watch it go. Three-run home run, and the Rays have a 3-0 lead.
Kevin Kiermaier, left-handed hitter, hits the first pitch deep to right field. Backboard Ezekiel Carrera. He's at the wall. It's gone. The ball goes into the Rays bullpen in right field, and Kevin Kiermaier has given Tampa Bay a 2-1 lead here as he hits home run number 12. And the Rays 199th this season.
Things start snowballing, but I got to believe we're rock bottom. You know, I don't see how much lower it can go. So, that, you know, I'm optimistic that this will turn in a hurry.
It's At the Letters for Thursday, September 15th on iTunes and Sportsnet.ca. My name is Arden Zwelling. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, baseball editor for Sportsnet.ca, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, what's going on, man?
Well, we're watching a Blue Jays team that seems to be playing its worst baseball of the year.
That's direct.
Yeah.
That was quick. I thought maybe we'd get to know each other a little bit first.
Yeah, that was quick. Mean, well, I guess it's debatable. They had some struggles early, but this is not a good stretch for the Toronto Blue Jays.
No, I would agree with that. I think that's a pretty good take. I think that's a pretty good opinion. Blue Jays not having a good stretch. We're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about Josh Donaldson and his injury today. Maybe we'll talk about Marco Estrada and his injury as well. We're going to talk about what's going to happen as the Blue Jays go out west to face the vaunted Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. You ever thought about that name, Los Angeles Angels, the Angels Angels?
Right, because Los Dude. Angeles in Spanish.
Yeah.
Right.
So they're going to go play the Angels of Anaheim. And then they're going to play Seattle Mariners, who have won like 200 games in a row, something like that. Have you looked at what they've been doing?
Oh, yeah. They've been playing great.
It's ridiculous. Walker. When I looked at this trip and it coming up, I was kind of like, well, you know, look, they're going to get the Angels who suck. They're going to get the Rays who are in last place, but we all saw how that went. And then they're going to get Seattle. And by the time they get to Seattle, they're probably going to be out of it, the Mariners. You know, they'll probably be saying, yeah, you know, good try, good run, good effort. No, we're going to win 8 in a row and put ourselves 1.5 out of wild card. Like this, the Mariners are going to be into those games.
Yeah. Oh, with good reason. It's funny because the Blue Jays have not played well. This has played a role in allowing teams like the Yankees and Tigers, Mariners to stay in it at a time of year that, you know, I thought a lot of these teams, the Yankees and Mariners in particular, I thought they'd be out of it by now.
It's been nice to see Kansas City fade off. I think we can write off the Royals. They went on that crazy like run of their own at that one point and put themselves back into the conversation. And like I remember when we were looking at like, you know, where we might be going for a potential postseason back when the Blue Jays were a postseason lock back in the glory days. And I was kind of like, oh my God, like, yeah, we're going to have to book KC hotels. And like, no, KC done. Houston outside looking in, maybe an outside shot, but yeah, past that, Yankees still very much in this, Seattle in this, Detroit very much in this. There's a lot to be said in this American League race.
Four-way tie atop the East. I think that idea that you put out there is just too much craziness to fathom, but also can, like, it would be, it's not impossible. There are four teams within four games.
So yeah, we just did a Facebook Live and I was just so bored and I was like, yeah, you know what would be great? Like a four-way tie atop the East. Like that would just be like just chaos, pure mayhem. And this is now what I'm rooting for. This is now my vested interest is like emotionally is in that happening. So if that doesn't happen, I'm going to be upset.
The Yankees and Red Sox play each other this weekend too. So if the Yankees beat up on Boston, which is a big if, the Red Sox obviously are the better team. But if the Yankees beat up on the Red Sox, then that would really go a long way toward establishing that chaos because then you have the Yankees and Red Sox kind of evening out, Orioles, Jays, you know, who knows what happens with those two teams. But that, it actually could happen. I mean, if this weekend goes a certain way, it actually could happen.
I'm actually going to be there, actually. I'm going to be at that game tomorrow night at Fenway.
Sweet.
I got a bachelor party in Boston this weekend.
Yankees,
so now
Red Sox.
Now I have a team to cheer for.
Oh,
now I'm a Yankees fan.
Exactly.
I got to look at the probables and see who I've got on the mound, but I'm a Yankees fan this weekend.
Amazing. So are you seeing all three games or?
No. We're seeing that one. Patriots game on Sunday.
Cool.
That's going to be wicked.
Who are they playing?
That's going to be sick. They're playing the Dolphins.
Okay.
Boy, it's their home opener.
Yeah.
tailgating.
Nice. So you love a good tailgate.
If you know one thing about me,
yeah,
I'm going to see, who am I going to see? Luis Sessa and Clay Buchholz. So that could really go either way.
It could.
There's not a lot you can predict there.
Yeah, and you can say that about this entire division right now.
Yes, absolutely. So I want all four teams to finish tied atop, but I guess they play each other so much it might be difficult for that to happen. I don't know. Like, they're not bunched up enough. You look at this, like the American League East, there are four games between the top four teams. There is no other division where the second place team is within four games.
Isn't that crazy?
And in the AL East, the fourth place team is within four games. It's nuts.
Yeah, if you're a baseball fan, I mean, say you're a fan of the game, say you live somewhere in the States, you know, let's say you live in the Midwest, and you don't have particularly a vested interest in any one team.
Yeah.
The East is the division you're watching. I mean, that's the only place where you are going to find any intrigue down the stretch. Maybe there's the exception of the NL wild card. You got the Mets and the Cardinals and the Giants in the mix there. But as far as divisional races, as far as real intrigue, I mean, this is the division.
Absolutely. And as a Jays fan, it's obviously torturous, like just what's going on right now with the team. But yeah, if you can kind of just step back and take an objective view of it, this can be a hell of a race coming down to it. And look, if the Yankees have got the Red Sox this weekend, who are the Orioles playing? Do you know off the top of your head? Have they got the Rays? They got the Rays. The Blue Jays get the Angels. They get a bad team. As poorly as the Blue Jays have played for the last like 14 games, like a really substantial stretch where things have not gone well and they have not played well. The Blue Jays have been bad for two straight weeks. You've got, like, if there was ever a soft landing spot, it's Anaheim.
Well, look at the pitching matchups. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about where the Angels are at right now. And I know people understandably point to Trout, the best player in baseball, and Pujols, who's having a nice year as far as his power numbers. But after that, and after Calhoun, the offense drops off so much. There's just not a lot there offensively beyond those two or three guys. And on the pitching side, you look at this team without Matt Shoemaker, who's, you know, hopefully he's recovering well, but there's nothing there. There's really not when it comes to starting pitching. So the Blue Jays, not that you want to read too much into one series and say, you know, must win. Okay, this is at the point in the year where you do need to bank some wins, and this is a chance to do it, a really good chance.
Yeah, you must win now. Like, the Blue Jays must start winning.
They
must.
Yeah. No, not that any individual game is a must win, but they must start winning. That's a fair way to put it.
You know what I mean? Like, they must start winning. They really must. And look, you're going to get Daniel Wright against Jay Happ. Like, that is a mismatch if I've ever seen one. That's the Thursday matchup. Then you got Jared Weaver, Ricky Nolasco, and Alex Meyer. I mean, Weaver did give the Jays a tough time when the Angels came up to Toronto, but he's still, like, he just throws slop.
Yeah, the Angels are one of the two or three worst teams in the American League. A big reason for that is because they have one of the two or three worst starting rotations in the American League, and now the Blue Jays are facing them. This is a good chance for the Blue Jays.
Those are all facts.
Yeah.
Incisive analysis. The Blue Jays are now facing the Los Angeles Angels. So look, what's going on? Like, it's bad. It's like, I can't even come in here and, like, because when this skid started in Tampa, it was just kind of like, yeah, you know, they always play bad in Tampa Bay. Like, their manager calls it a house of horrors. Like, you know, yeah, okay, they play bad there. They got swept by the Yankees. It's like, yeah, teams get swept. Things happen. You look at, you know, the game that Justin Smoke hit that ball, like, right to the wall. You know, that game almost turned. You know, you think about, I still think back to that Josh Donaldson, like, scorched one down the third base line in, like, the fifth inning of that second game, with runners on, and Chase Headley made a play that I didn't think Chase Headley could make at this point in his career. It was unbelievable. And so I think back to those things, I was kind of like, okay, it's fine. But like, now we are at a point where it's like, no, this is really bad. This team is playing really, really poorly. And like, two hits against the Tampa Bay Rays yesterday, two hits. This is like, John Gibbons called it rock bottom. Like, I can't imagine how much worse it could get. It's so bad.
I mean, if guys get hurt, and if the Donaldson thing is really serious, then you could see things getting worse. But yeah, I agree. This, you would think this is the rock bottom, and they're in a playoff position. So If you want to find silver linings, then you go there. If you're not inclined to look for silver linings, then you could point to the offense, which hasn't hit, and the pitching, which hasn't pitched, and the fielding, which has been really awful in the last few days. We've seen a couple of stretches, Friday in particular against the Red Sox. That was not major league caliber fielding.
No.
We saw, and some of that continued. So they've really had trouble fielding the ball at times, but that's in the past now. Everything, all 79 wins, all 66 losses, those are in the books. Do you think from this point onward that the Blue Jays' poor play in September is going to continue? Like, is there anything about the last 12 games when they've played so poorly that should make us think that they are going to continue to play this badly?
I mean, no. Well, to me, like, and I, you know, like, I, you just, it's a good team is the thing. Like, they're a good team, and I truly believe they're a good team that's playing really, really poorly right now. And, like, and sometimes, like, you find these things that are happening to them, and you wonder if it's just kind of like a, just confirming what you want to believe. Because you look at, like, some of the exit velocities. And you look at Josh Donaldson barreling up balls throughout a string of 31 plate appearances where he didn't have a hit. Jose Bautista, he had, I believe it was 3 or 4 balls that he hit over 100 miles an hour that went for outs. I mean, that's abnormal. Those balls go for hits more than 70% of the time. He had 4 in a row that went for outs. So you kind of look at stuff like that. You look at how good Marco Estrada looked yesterday. Pitching with a herniated disc, apparently, according to John Morosi, looked so good. I mean, struck out the first 5 batters of the game, 19 swinging strikes. Look at the 2 hits that got him. The first one, Kevin Kiermaier, 2-run shot on a 2-strike changeup at his knees. Went down and got it. Kevin Kiermaier, that ball came off his bat at 89 miles an hour. It was the 8th softest home run hit in the major leagues this year. There have been more than 5,000 home runs, and that was the 8th softest hit. It's like, what? Like, it's confounding. And then you look at the, who was it, Dickerson, who hit it up, hit the one up, he had the single up the middle.
Skipping Stone.
That ball almost bounced off the plate.
Yeah.
And Dickerson still hit it up the middle somehow. I mean, can you look at Marco Estrada and say that this guy performed poorly yesterday? You can't. So no. Can you look at the bats who are barreling up balls and seem to just be hitting them right at guys? Can you look at the fact that the Blue Jays got into a bases-loaded situation with Edwin Encarnacion late in a game, in game 2 against the Rays, you know, at a point, you know, against the Rays bullpen, and he you know, struck out on a high fastball? I mean, can you say the Blue Jays aren't putting themselves in positions to win and that their players aren't playing good? You can't. But am I just searching for reasons to say this team isn't as bad as it is? Maybe they're just bad.
They're not a bad team. They're a good team. They are. I mean,
they've been bad for 2 weeks.
Yeah. So, I mean, good teams are bad for 2 weeks all the time. And I think that, and that's where it gets tricky, because I think I look at it in largely the same way, where I think this is a good team. The one thing where you wonder is if Donaldson's hurt, then it starts to look like a good team, but definitely not a great team if Donaldson's hurt. And we don't know. I mean, I think that he'll probably return this weekend at some point, but 3 games, that's longer than what they expected with the hip issue. And here he is after 3 games, having missed a stretch of time that they could have used him.
Let me add one more confounding thing. Scott Feldman had gone 119 straight plate appearances against a right-hander without walking one. He comes into the game the other night and walks 2. He went 119 straight. It was the longest active streak in the majors. If you were looking for a guy in the major leagues who was least likely to walk a right-handed hitter, it was Scott Feldman, and the Blue Jays called on him, and he walked 2.
Was it Scott Feldman, though?
He walked 2.
I'd say Clayton Kershaw is probably really less likely to walk.
Well, yeah, let me know when he's in the Blue Jays. But yeah, you're right. If Josh Donaldson's hurt, that's bad.
Yeah.
I think Josh Donaldson's been hurt all year. And I think he had a calf thing earlier this year. He's had hand things. I mean, he was kind of telling us yesterday, you know, I've had a lot of lower body injuries this year, and I played through them. Josh Donaldson's a guy who came into this season with 3 straight of 158 games played, and he went to the postseason each of those years. Obviously, the A's didn't go particularly deep. The Blue Jays did. But 3 straight of 158 games. This is a guy who is one of the most durable in baseball. If he's taking himself out of a game, out of a series, and he's saying, I can't go out there and perform I can't help my team win, that's bad. If you're not recovering within those 3 games to the point where your team is sending you for medical imaging because you're not responding to treatment, that's also bad.
Yeah. So given Donaldson's situation, How good is the Jays offense right now? Because you've got Travis, who's hitting well. You've got Batista, who, you know, I feel like all year we've been waiting to see him get into one of those hot streaks, and it hasn't happened.
I know I have.
Yeah, I think the Jays have too. I mean, they've been treated to some really excellent offense from him over the course of the last 5-6 years. Just hasn't come together for an extended period this year. But you do have Tulowitzki, who's hit a lot better. Martin's playing his best baseball of the year. Encarnacion's having, I'm not going to say an MVP season, but he's having a tremendous offensive season. So you've got some pieces, but then you have guys like Saunders, who, you know, has struggled since the All-Star break. You've got Upton, who hasn't put it together offensively since he's been here. And Donaldson, who's battling some health issues.
For the last 2 weeks, I'd say there's three guys who have hit well. Troy Tulowitzki, Devin Travis, Edwin Encarnacion. Outside of that, I can't think of a guy that I think has performed well at the plate. And I think the approaches have been fine. I think guys are barreling up balls. Jose Bautista, I mentioned the exit velocity earlier. I mean, guys are barreling up balls, but they're not falling in. You can even look at it by over the last 14 days by weighted runs created plus. Troy Tulowitzki's first at 130. Devin Travis, 126. Edwin Encarnacion at 116. And then Ezekiel Carrera at 103.
Zeke.
And everyone else is below 100.
Yep.
And that's Zeke in 12 plate appearances in the last 14 days.
Yeah.
He's had 12 plate appearances over the last 14 days. And he's been like 103 weighted runs created plus. Like, guys, you know, Jose Bautista with 54 plate appearances, 87. Kevin Pillar, 44 plate appearances, 80. You know, like, they're, guys aren't hitting. And the bottom half of this order, I think a lot of people forget about late last year when the bottom half of the Blue Jays order hit really well. Ryan Goins went on such a tear at the end of last season, and who knows where that came from, but it was like a 2-month sustained thing where he was walking and he was driving the ball. Ben Revere had like a career year last year. Like, he had a ridiculous season last year. It was great for the Blue Jays. Kevin Pillar was better last year, I'd say, at the plate than he's been this year.
Colabello. They don't have him.
Chris Colabello.
Yeah.
Right? You know, that was still, I mean, he probably hit about 15 bombs. I mean, he was, you know, he was on base all the time. You know, they're just not, they don't have that. They don't have that depth to the offense this season.
They're not mashing lefties the same way either.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's strange.
You know, based on track records, guys like Martin and Tulo, they should be hitting lefties really well. They haven't. They've been barely better against lefties than they have against righties. This is something Shai Davide's written about a couple times in the last week or so, because when you're facing guys who aren't necessarily Clayton Kershaw, you would think that you would have the chance to put up some lopsided numbers, and it has not happened.
Do you want to know D'Aaron Navarro's numbers over the last 2 weeks?
What are they?
Not good. OPS of 296 in his 21 plate appearances. Not so good. Not so much of an upgrade over Josh Tolley.
No.
I mean, they're just not getting those contributions. And you would think that you bring in D'Aaron Navarro to be your backup catcher, and you would think switch hitter, guy who's hit well in this ballpark before, like, you would think that that would give you an upgrade at that spot, and it hasn't. You know?
Yeah. So now they're searching offensively, and they're in a spot where they need that offense to cover up for some of the struggles that they're dealing with on the pitching side, because we've seen the bullpen come back to earth a little bit. I think that there's a chance for the bullpen to still finish strong if they ease up on Biagini's workload a little bit, if Brett Cecil can continue taking steps forward. But they need a lot from the bullpen too, because the rotation hasn't been pitching deep into games the way that it did earlier in the season.
Even Russ Martin has not had a good 2 weeks, and he was on fire for a while there. And over the last 2 weeks, a 593 OPS, he's hitting 129 over the last 2 weeks. Getting on base at a 270 clip. Not good, man. These 2 weeks have been bad.
Yeah.
He's been really bad. And you can, so I don't know, maybe I'm searching again, but Russ Martin's batting average and balls in play over that time, 143. Josh Donaldson's is 136. You know, like, those are below average numbers. Edwin Encarnacion's 243 batting average of balls in play. That should tell you that when they're putting the ball in play, they're not going for hits. That should correct. It should turn. I don't know. They've only got 17 games left for it to happen.
Yeah. And I think that the struggles of the last 2 weeks, for the most part, don't forecast doom for this team. I think that there's still enough good pieces and enough bad teams on the schedule. When you look particularly at the Angels this weekend, that they can make up that ground. But when you have 17 games left, I mean, if they go 10-7, they're still only 89 wins. I mean, they really, Yeah. Every loss right now is pretty costly because you can only afford how many losses? 7, 8 losses? Maybe you can lose 8 games the rest of the way.
If they lost 8, they would finish with 88 wins.
Yeah.
And be hopefully the second wild card would be your hope.
Yeah. So if you're dealing with 8 losses, that's all you can do. I mean, every one of those losses is huge. You can't afford a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're playing some good teams down the stretch. You're playing the Red Sox to finish the year. That could easily be 2 of your 8. I mean, so this is the kind of thing that would drive a manager insane. I'm sure John Gibbons is not thinking about it in these terms, but you know, there's an awareness on the coaching staff in the front office that there is only so much time left. You do have to start playing well at some point.
Yeah. The team was 75-56 on Monday, August the 29th when they beat Baltimore. 75-56. And at that point, it kind of looked like, yeah, hey, if the Blue Jays just play 500 baseball the rest of the way, they'll be fine. They've played well below 500 baseball. It's funny how, like, and you know, you said it. Good teams go through bad two-week stretches. It happens. But when it happens in September, it can be so devastating. It can really hurt you. Like, and it's, and like you said, they've got maybe 7 or 8 losses to play with going down. I mean, it's, that's not a lot, man. Like, and you're playing the Red Sox, you're playing the Yankees, you're playing teams that are playing well. You still got to play the Orioles, who have not gone away. All year we sat in here and been like, this team's going to fade. And yet they're a game ahead of the Jays.
Just to back that statement up, the Cubs at the beginning of July, end of June, they went 1-9.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing about good teams. They rebound from bad two-week stretches when they have them. Right after that, the Cubs went back to being the Cubs and they started winning all kinds of games. So if the Blue Jays want to prove that this is a blip, then it begins against the Angels because you can't afford to let this seep into your season anymore.
No, and you can't. I mean, you really do have to pull it all together. That includes the bats. That includes the starters, which have been, I don't know, I think the starting pitching has been okay lately. I think Marcus Stroman was pretty good the other night. Jay Happ pitched great against Boston. Estrada was good. Who, you know, Liriano was terrific.
Yeah.
With his last time out. We haven't seen R.A. Dickey in a while. And who am I forgetting?
Sanchez.
Yeah. And Aaron Sanchez. Yeah. So Aaron Sanchez pitching with the blisters the other day. He had no off speed. He didn't have his changeup. He didn't have his curveball. He couldn't throw those pitches. It was all two seamers. And he couldn't get the kind of sink and movement on his two seamers that he wanted to because of the blisters on his fingers. So he got hit by a really good hitting team that was sitting on the two seamer because they knew that he didn't have his other pitches. I mean, but I feel good about this starting rotation. I think Blue Jays fans should as well.
Yeah, and it's an interesting mix because it's so non-traditional to have these 6 starters that you're essentially rotating in and out of the rotation. I definitely don't think it's a 6-man rotation. I don't think that's what we're dealing with here, but it's a rotation that at various points will consist of 6 different people. So yeah, I think that Liriano showed the Blue Jays something in that start. And it was very encouraging. The one thing with him, and maybe Stroman to some extent too,
I
would not let Francisco Liriano pitch through the order 3 times. I just wouldn't, especially now with big expanded rosters and 10-man bullpens. Take him out of there after 2 times.
The numbers do get quite inflated. I wonder about the 3rd time through, 4th time through kind of numbers sometimes, because that's naturally going to be when a pitcher's pitch count is up, when he's less effective, when he's fatigued.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, naturally.
Exactly.
How many pitchers are there in the majors that mow down their, you know, 3rd time or 4th time through the order consistently?
I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you said, but like, so it's, I'm saying it's not specific to Liriano.
No.
Because people have been pulling out those Liriano numbers and being like, this guy, his 3rd time through, can't do it.
No, it's
like every pitcher.
Yeah. It's not some failing of his. I think in his case, the numbers are more pronounced. They have been in the past. They are very pronounced this year, especially in terms of home runs. But no, it's nothing against him. It's certainly the case with most guys. And I think at this point in the year, it's a little easier if you're a manager to make that kind of decision. I mean, we've seen bullpens getting ready in the 1st, 2nd inning almost as a matter of course in the last little while.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, this is September. you don't have time to let a guy work through something on the mound. You got to win.
Exactly.
Like next R.A. Dickey start, if he doesn't have it early, John Gibbons is going to that bullpen.
100%, as he should. And you've got guys like Feldman has been a disappointment for this team since he came over here, and they really could have used that steady long relief presence, which maybe, I don't know, maybe that's an oxymoron. Maybe guys are sent to long relief because they're not steady and they're not that good in the first place, or they're not having good seasons in the first place. But Feldman has not been effective as a member of the Blue Jays.
Do you think he was brought here to be like a high leverage guy though?
No, but you need, but even low leverage guys, we're almost to the point in the season where even if a game is low leverage for the Jays, you can't afford to just throw it away. You still need guys in there who are effective. Because if you're, you know, if there's one rally to be found in the next 17 games, if there's one rally from down 5-1 or down 7-4 or some, or you know, 7-2, you've got to find a way to make that happen.
When's the last time the Blue Jays did that?
It's been a while.
Can't remember the last time the Blue Jays had a big inning.
Although, you know what? They did that against the Twins. It was against Minnesota. They did that every game of that series against the Twins. Yeah. They seemed to come back. And then ever since then, they just haven't been able to put that together.
That was the last time the Blue Jays were good, was that Minnesota series.
Well, Baltimore too, because they took 2 of 3 in Baltimore right after that.
They did, actually.
They were pretty good on the road. In
those were tighter games. Those were close games.
Yeah. They should have swept. I mean, that's the thing with a long baseball season. You can look back, and I understand the temptation too to say, okay, there's this one game, the second game of the season in Tampa, and if that one umpire had gotten the call, well, I don't know. Every team has games like that.
No, absolutely. That's baseball.
That's baseball.
That's baseball.
It's just what happens.
That is just what happens. And you think about some of the leads that the bullpen blew earlier this year. I mean, you can go way back, right? Like, you know, like the Blue Jays did not start this season well.
No.
At all. You know, like I feel like they were below 500 through April, I want to say. Like,
they were.
As I look it up right now, oh my God, they only hit 500 on May 5th. They were 14-15 on May 4th. They ended April at 11-14.
Yeah. And then as late as May 18th, they were 19-23.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and then they very good through the middle. Very good through, I want to say July was a good month. I think August was mostly a good month. Now things have kind of gone off the rails in a pretty big way.
Yeah. And so they're in, it's so funny because they are in, I don't want to call it salvage mode, but they can't, you know, as we've said, they, you know, you just can't let this, you can't let this continue any longer.
No. And it's, and what's interesting about this point of the season is we can't even talk about like, well, okay, so maybe they can make this change, or maybe they can add someone, or maybe they can go out and get somebody to fill this hole. It's like, no, this is it. This is the team. This is the team you're going to win or lose with. It's over. You're not going to go out and get a Billy Butler or whatever like the Yankees are. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is the team. This is the lineup. You're not going to put in Dalton Pompey to start or anything like that. You're not going to do anything rash. These guys, the 9 that John Gibbons has been putting out there, and the guys in the rotation and the back end of that bullpen, these are the guys who will win or lose.
So wild card now looks like the most likely outcome.
And I would say so.
If that's the case, the Jays would have Sanchez lined up to start the final day of the season, which they might need to win to get in.
Yeah, and that's nightmare stuff, right? If you need to win that last game and you need to burn Sanchez there.
Right, could easily happen.
And like you would hope that you could set up either J-Hap or Marco Estrada to be good to go the next day, probably preferably J-Hap.
The thing is, though, those guys are also scheduled to pitch in Fenway Park that final weekend of the season.
Are they?
So I think it looks like Stroman would be your wild card guy.
I feel okay about that. Marcus has been really good lately. Like he's been throwing the ball really well. He had great life on his two-seamer the other night. Like the results weren't great. But like he pitched really well. Russ Martin even kind of said like, look, because I brought up to Russ, I was like, you know, we don't usually see Marcus walk 4 guys in a game. Like it's been a while since he did that. Like what was going on there? And he was like, I don't even want to talk about that. He had great stuff. I'm not going to look to, you know, find a reason why he's walking guys. His fastball is great. His two-seamer was great. His spinning stuff was on point. Like Russ was over the moon about him. And you look at that outing, 6 innings, 4 hits.
Here's something else about Stroman in a potential wild card game. A wild card game is essentially a bullpen game because you're going to be going to your bullpen.
It goes matchups crazy at a certain point.
Exactly. Yeah. Extremely early. You have big bullpens because you're not carrying your extra starters. Maybe you have 2 starters on your entire 25-man roster. So you have a big bullpen. And Stroman, much like Liriano, has been really good. First 2 times through the order. Third time through, he's allowed 14 home runs. 884 OPS against. Really? So he's really struggled that third time, but in a wild card game, that doesn't matter. He's not facing anyone for the third time if the Blue Jays are going to handle this in a rational way.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, I would feel okay about Stroman there. Really, the Blue Jays have 4 starters that I feel good about, you know? And It's the offense is really the issue. As we're kind of like, this is kind of like, this has been good, this back and forth, because like I'm figuring some stuff out right now. It's the offense. That's yeah. really it. Bullpen's been fine.
Yeah.
Joaquin Benoit has been terrific since he got here. Jason Grilly, you don't want to know where the Blue Jays would be without Jason Grilly. Roberto Osuna is Roberto Osuna. Even Brett Cecil, yeah. as you wrote on sportsnet.ca, is coming around.
Yeah, he is. I think that when you look back to July 22nd and full, you know, I'm not trying to hide the fact that I'm cherry picking the...
It's a little arbitrary.
Yeah, I'm cherry picking the dates here to make these numbers look good. But in his last 22 appearances, he's got a 1.72 ERA. He's got 22 strikeouts and 15 and a third innings. And the guys who are watching him closely, John Gibbons, Russell Martin, they're impressed by what they've seen. So I think that it's trending in the right direction for Brett Cecil. And that's key for this team because I thought at the deadline they missed an opportunity to add a left-handed reliever, but maybe Cecil's emerging into that guy that they can once again count on.
The other day we saw him facing righties, which I think was a big step because there was a period there where John Gibbons lost faith in Brett Cecil against right-handers. And we saw him against Evan Longoria, I want to say, got him out. That was a step, I think, in the right direction.
Because you need someone who can be more than a one or two batter reliever. You know, what if in the seventh inning you have two lefties out of four or three lefties out of four?
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to have to pull him and then, you know, go to a Biagini or a Benoit. You want to be able to take advantage of Cecil against all four of those batters, for example. And I think that this would be a step in that direction.
Especially when your next lefties up are Aaron Loop and Matt Dermody.
Yeah, you can't count on those guys in big spots.
No. Aaron Loop, I mean, just can't, you know, I don't have words.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he's hitting so many left-handed batters. It's bizarre.
The other day he came into a game, he threw one pitch in the opposite batter's box, which got past Russell Martin, and the next pitch he hit the guy, and that was his outing.
Yeah.
That was it. And that was after like throwing a bunch of warm-up pitches that I'm sure were all right down the middle. It's after all of his bullpen throws. You turn on the lights and like the ball just doesn't go where he wants it to.
Yeah, it's been a rough stretch for Loop, that's for sure. So I don't think that he's someone that you can count on.
No. I think you're kind of your bullpen depth chart, as it were. Roberto Osuna in the ninth. You got Grilly and Benoit to set up. Cecil and Biagini. I don't know where you go. Feldman's next, I guess. Like, where do you even go beyond that? But like, those are your five guys. Those are your dudes. Biagini even has had his struggles recently. And you wonder about a guy who's never had to pitch into September before, who's been in the minor leagues his entire professional career, and you know, you wonder about how hard the Blue Jays leaned on him in, you know, kind of at points in the season, and whether he's running out of gas a little bit. Maybe it's just a little blip. I mean, he was going to give up a home run eventually. Pitchers give up home runs, but yeah, three to his last 19 batters. You wonder if he's running out of gas a little bit, and if maybe you really have a core of four guys.
Yeah, I think those five are the main ones, and then you know, if they get to the playoffs, and of course that is an if for this team,
yeah,
then you round it out with a couple of maybe Schultz, Tapera, you know, Feldman. You have options at that point, but really those are the five that you're going to see in any kind of a close game.
It would be interesting to see how they would build a playoff bullpen, because past that group that we identified, it's a lot of like wild cards.
Yeah. Tapera, yeah. Danny Barnes could be in that mix.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah, is Dermody in that mix? Like,
they might want a second lefty just to have one, but I haven't seen enough from Loop and Dermody to think that those guys are, you know, worth the roster spot.
No, who was it? Souza the other night? He's the lefty. Like, Dermody just a slider just right over the heart of the plate, and it got hit like a million miles. You can't, you know, you got to finish that slider. You can't just leave it over the plate like that. You can't have it.
Yeah. So yeah, it does come down to the offense.
It does.
And
it really
entering
does.
The season.
And like at what part of the Blue Jays team would you have the most confidence
in?
Probably
exactly.
The offense.
Yeah.
Troy Tulowitzki plays for this team. Josh Donaldson's the defending MVP. Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista both have over 300 home runs in their careers.
Yeah. So they can hit their way through this in theory. Whether it actually plays out that way, who knows?
You would think. But even throughout this season, like I feel like the whole year we've been waiting for the offense, and we're now here we are on September 15th, and
maybe with 17 games left, I'm prepared. Maybe after 150 games, whatever it's been, I'm prepared to say it's not going to show up.
Well, it's not going to show up the way it did last year. They're not a great offense. They're definitely not a great offense.
It's not an A-plus offense.
No, but it's a good offense. I think it's a B-plus offense.
Yeah.
And so that can be enough. I mean, this is a team that's good enough in other respects that if you have a good offense, and I think right now there's something like fifth in the American League in runs scored. They've scored a solid amount of runs. They're not the Red Sox. They're not a great offense, but I still think that big picture, you look at the names, you look at the recent performances, there should be enough guys in here to give the Orioles and Red Sox a serious run for this thing.
The Seattle Mariners have scored more runs than the Toronto Blue Jays.
Right.
Would you have thought that coming into this season?
Well, and consider the parks too.
Yeah.
The Jays have a huge advantage there for playing in Toronto, and the Mariners play in a pretty pitcher-friendly spot.
Absolutely. In terms of batting average and like, you know, whatever batting average, but the Blue Jays are 23rd in the major leagues.
Yeah, but whatever.
What's batting? Average, yeah, whatever batting average, but still.
Yeah.
Get some hits. That's what it is. It's the offense. The offense is underperforming. And if you subtract Josh Donaldson from that, I mean, it's no bueno.
So they should sack bunt their way through this, is what you're saying?
I don't think they should do that. That doesn't help your batting average at all.
No. Yeah.
All right. I hated that the other day in the first inning. Devin Travis, like if you were going to get to Alex Cobb, it was in that first inning. Devin Travis made good contact, went the other way for a double, like, you know, great plate approach. Everybody's buzzing. And then, yeah, sack bunt, sack fly. They played for a run and they got a run.
Yeah.
And then Alex Cobb didn't allow a hit until like the seventh when I think De'Aaron Navarro came through with a hit. I'm pretty sure the sixth or seventh against him. But like, You know what I mean? Like, you have an opportunity there to jump on a pitcher who maybe isn't just settled in yet, isn't used to the in-game mound yet. Don't give away outs.
Yeah.
Don't give up outs.
No, exactly.
You're not going to win by one.
So if you're going to change your offensive approach, I think that the move is maybe you take the ball the other way. You know, maybe you go up there and you take a couple more pitches or you swing more aggressively. There are ways to tweak your approach without completely giving in to small ball thinking, which really is just not the way the game is going. You look at the Orioles as kind of a counterpoint to that.
Yeah.
The Orioles have stolen, I think, 16 bases this year.
Is that it?
Yeah. And they have tons of home runs. I think they're leading baseball in home runs. They score a good amount of runs. And how much small ball do you see Buck Showalter playing? Not a lot. And I mean, I know Blue Jays fans aren't necessarily Buck Showalter's biggest advocates, but You have to give him credit for the job he's done with this team. And I think part of that is the fact that he doesn't give in to this idea that you must bunt to score runs. The Orioles, I have it here.
17 stolen bases.
17 stolen bases. But because they have 232 home runs, most in baseball, they're scoring a lot. They're definitely putting runs on the board.
And hey, they won 1-0 last night on the strength of a Mark Trumbo solo shot.
Exactly.
That was it. That was enough to beat the Red Sox at Fenway.
Kevin Gausman, if the Jays had to face him in a one-game playoff, because that's how it would line up right now, Jays and Orioles in the wild card game.
Right.
If they were facing Gausman, that would be a tough matchup. Because they've hit Tillman before.
Yeah.
I don't know if the other Orioles starters are all that scary. But Gausman, he's having a really nice year.
Oh, yeah. If you're the Orioles, you want to line up either Gausman or Tillman for that game. Because the past that, you're looking at Ubaldo or Yovani Gallardo. I mean, I don't know, Bundy.
Like, Wade Miley. Don't forget about him.
Oh my God, Wade Miley.
Can you imagine? He shuts down the Jays.
It was the other day when, like, I think it was like the top of the first at Rogers Center, and like we were like two batters into the game. I like look up at the out of town scoreboard. It's like 5-0 Red Sox. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Wade Miley.
It's funny hearing John Gibbons kind of acknowledge that he and DeMarlo Hale can't help but look at that scoreboard during games.
Well, it's right in front of your face.
Yeah, it's staring right at them.
Yeah, you can't not see it.
You can just imagine them seeing that scoreboard and thinking, oh, Wade Miley let us down.
So, yeah, I mean, if the Blue Jays are in a wild card game, you know, so if you don't get the Orioles, say you got Detroit. Well, now you got Justin Verlander. Say you got Seattle. Now you got King Felix.
Yeah.
Assuming they don't need to
or
use those
Fulmer,
guys.
Taijuan Walker. I mean, there's some pretty good pitchers in the mix for these playoff berths. So it would be extremely entertaining as the possibility of a wild card game starts to look more likely for the Blue Jays. You know, you start thinking about it more, and it would be high stakes. It would be something new for this franchise to experience. I think that it would really test the nerves of Blue Jays fans.
Oh my God.
A set of nerves that's probably already been tested pretty heavily in the last couple of weeks, but it would be entertaining.
You think these games are rough? Just wait. Yeah.
Wait until Wade Miley is spinning a perfecto against the Jays.
Oh, God. I don't even want to consider that. Anything else we should touch on with this team right now?
Charrington.
Oh, my God. How did I forget about that? Yeah, Ben Charrington, former GM of the Boston Red Sox, won a World Series with the Boston Red Sox, worked with Theo Epstein there. Of course, this crew of young, good Boston Red Sox players, Jackie Bradley Jr., Yoan Moncada, Xander Bogaerts, all these, you know.
Benintendi was Charrington's last draft.
Yeah, this is Charrington. He brought those guys in. Now he works in the Toronto Blue Jays front office. That's a good thing.
Yeah, he played a really big role in building, well, not only the 2013 World Series champs when he was the GM, but even dating back to 2007, 2004, he had a big role in building those teams. He's a big player development guy. To me, this is I don't know. I mean, at the risk of, you know, not to take away focus from the team on the field, but to me, yeah, this is a huge move. This is a really big addition for this team.
Absolutely. This is a guy who was out of baseball for more than a year after Tom Borowski took over in Boston. So this is a guy who I'm sure plenty of teams have called him over the last year and however long it's been and said, hey, will you join us? So this is a guy who, like, I haven't talked to him, but I assume this is a guy who kind of, you know, could feel his way around different organizations, maybe interviewed around, maybe talked to different people. It seems like he kind of picked his spot. For him to have picked this front office, I think that is the opposite of indictment. That is a good thing.
Yeah.
That is a endorsement. That's the word I'm looking for. That is an endorsement of the Blue Jays front office that he said, no, this is the crew that I want to work with.
And if you look at the Blue Jays franchise right now, they have a good baseball team at the major league level.
Yeah.
Very old, we might add. We haven't really touched on that, but they're very
the
old team.
The oldest.
Yes, the oldest, but also...
Shockingly, the oldest baseball team in the majors is struggling to find energy in September.
Well, I don't know, though. Are they struggling to find energy?
Is that too pedantic?
They're struggling to find wins. Before we get back to Charrington, do you think that they are playing a lackluster style?
Yes.
Really?
I think that the defense has been poor.
It has.
Is that
because of a lack of energy?
I don't know. What's energy, right? Like, it's...
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like you... I don't know. We were in that clubhouse this weekend. It's not an easy going bunch right now. I think it's pretty tense right now. You know, I think it's pretty quiet. It's a little on edge, I think. I don't know. And who knows?
And a team meeting would, I think, back that up.
Yeah.
You don't have a team meeting if everyone's loose and just having a great time.
Good teams don't have meetings, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that tells you something. I think that the players are bringing energy. I think the coaches are bringing energy. I just think that it hasn't amounted to good or even acceptable baseball.
Right.
You know, like they're just playing poorly.
Yeah.
They're playing poorly with energy, but they're playing poorly.
But it's such a hard thing to, like, because you can't quantify it and you don't know, and we're not on the team. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We don't know what was said in that meeting. Have we had a podcast since the meeting?
No. Yeah. Because that was on the weekend. It feels like a long time ago.
Doesn't it feel like a while ago? We haven't talked about the meeting. It was a long one. It was like almost an hour. So, like, it's not like, you know, Troy Tulowitzki just got up and, you know, was like, all right, guys, let's get it together. Like, that was more than an hour. So, like, there was definitely some stuff was aired in there.
And we think Tulo called it.
I think so.
Yeah, that's what I think.
That's what I think. Yeah. I think it was Tulo. Most guys said, I just got a text from Mike Shaw.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it was definitely Tulo.
Traveling secretary.
Yeah.
Not a call-up.
No.
Sorry to keep track of them all.
I think there was definitely some stuff said. I think some guys maybe got called out. And I think there was definitely some, you know, some laundry aired.
The funniest thing, not that it's a topic that you necessarily think of as being that funny, but
yeah.
When Devin Travis was saying it was awesome, it was just like Devin Travis, just the most positive guy. The team meeting for a struggling team in September, and his takeaway it was awesome. He seemed so sincere too when he was saying it.
Well, that's Devin Travis. Like, every day is the best day of Devin Travis's life.
Right? Yeah.
He just starts every day with like, wow, everything's great.
Yeah.
But we haven't even talked about that. Yeah, they're having a meeting. That is indicative. Like, that kind of tells you that something wasn't right in that clubhouse. There's something, you know, needed to be said. And it wasn't a brief thing. It was a long thing where they all sat around and said some stuff. We weren't in there. We don't know exactly what they said, but that's, you know, that's not, if everything was hunky-dory, you're not having that meeting.
2-3 since the meeting.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's, yeah, it wasn't necessarily going to transfer over into performance on the field, but that kind of tells you that there's some stuff going on in that room.
Oh yeah, but I mean,
do you disagree with that? Like,
or, no, I think you're spot on. I think you're right. You don't have a meeting if everything's just going great. You don't, and everything wasn't. They weren't playing well. They were trying to stop the negativity on the field and possibly off the field. You know, again, we don't know what was said there, but yeah, I think that it hasn't translated into immediate results on the field. But then again, who's to say that it could? I mean, it's some of that stuff is not even about baseball, as John Gibbons was saying.
No, that's the thing. I think a lot of it probably wasn't about baseball. You know, it was probably a lot of it was about attitude. You know, a lot of it was probably about conflicts within, you know, these guys, like, people don't realize, like, these guys see each other every single day. They see each other more than they see their families, right? Like,
By far.
It's kind of ridiculous. Like, imagine going to your workplace every single day for 180 days.
Or in a row.
Yeah, in a row.
Like, and then flying across the country back and forth with these guys.
Yeah.
They spend tons of time together.
Hotels, yeah, all that stuff. Dinner, like, yeah, you can't avoid these people. So if there are those, you know, like, even in any workplace, conflicts arise, there's people you don't like, you know, there's differences, like, that sort of stuff. Like, you can't avoid these guys. They're there. And every night you have to go out and try to pull for each other, even if, you know, maybe you're not on, you know, good grounds with certain people.
Yeah. Back to Cherington for a sec.
Sure.
So I think that his skill set in Boston, a lot of the time, you know, he wasn't necessarily the one drafting the players,
right,
or, you know, sometimes he was signing players. Sometimes he was, you know, assisting in all kinds of different parts of the front office. But one of the common threads was developing players. And that's something the Red Sox have done really well to get to this point. And I think that that's what the Blue Jays need a lot of right now when it comes to a farm system that is not that great, especially at the upper level. So when he's looking at, say, the prospects on the Dunedin Blue Jays, guys like a Sean Reed Foley or an Anthony Alford, these are guys who are going to have to succeed for the next Blue Jays teams down the road.
Right.
And so Cherington can kind of work with Gil Kim. And also, he's got tons of experience in free agency. I mean, I think that when you look at a guy who's built a World Series winner and who really didn't mess up that much, which is, I think, also important to note, yes, Pablo Sandoval, awful contract, but even the Hanley deal, even the Rick Porcello deal, the deals that his critics would point to, I don't think those deals look so bad anymore.
No.
So I think that there's a lot to like about what Cherington has done in Boston and potentially a big pickup for the Jays.
Yeah. The two bad ones you look at are Pablo and Castillo. I think those are the two that you look at as kind of the worst ones. But then you look at all the successes that he had. Mookie Betts was like a fifth round pick, never on any kind of top prospect lists or anything like that, drafted and developed, and now he's an MVP candidate.
Yeah.
Xander Bogaerts was, he was a can't miss prospect, but the Red Sox still went and got him, you know?
Yeah.
Some of the work they've done in the international market, Yoan Moncada obviously hasn't had a great beginning to his MLB career, but, you know, everyone has kind of said, like, this guy has some pretty unbelievable tools. This is a really good player.
And some of this is linked. Like, some of those guys were acquired by the Red Sox initially when Epstein was still the GM.
Yeah.
And so, yes, some amount of that credit goes to Theo Epstein, but at the same time, Cherington was around when the Red Sox were building their first World Series.
Yeah.
So some of that credit would go to Cherington. It's always hard to separate. We don't even need to separate and say exactly how much credit one guy gets. Let's just say that Cherington was part of a front office that won a lot of games, a lot of divisions, a lot of World Series, and now he's going to be helping the Blue Jays.
Excuse me. And the Blue Jays are kind of in a process right now where they are kind of transforming the way they develop players. Like, they're kind of reinventing themselves from the way things ran under the previous regime to now. And so that's what, you know, the addition of Gil Kim to be in charge of player development, Angus Mugford brought in to run the high performance department. He's been around the ballpark all month. You know, he's been in there. They are kind of reinventing the way that they develop players. And I think this is part of it. Ben Cherington, a guy with a very strong player development background, he's in here, you know, it's said in the press release, he's here to, you know, be very strongly involved in player development. I'm sure that he will be consulted on player acquisition and things like that, but it seems like he's going to focus primarily on working with Gil Kim, working with Angus Mugford, and really getting the most out of prospects, getting them, you know, getting, finding kind of the, not only like the Anthony Alfords and Sean Reed Foley's, like the high ceiling guys, but also like the Kevin Pillars of this world who are drafted in the late rounds and who you build into everyday players who aren't, you know, going to win batting titles or MVPs, but serviceable, solid guy. Like the guys that, like, you know, the Cardinals have like made their, like, you know, their franchise on are just those, the guys, the serviceable dudes.
Or in Boston, the Brock Holtz.
Right. Yeah. Travis Shaw's.
Yeah.
You know, like those guys are important and you need to develop those guys. Kevin Pillar is like, I say this all the time, is like a tremendous success story for this Toronto Blue Jays development system. When you look at the fact he was drafted in like the 35th round or something, he was like the 970th guy taken in the draft. Like the fact that you turned him into one of the best defensive center fielders in baseball, into an everyday player, not a tremendous contributor with the bat, but I'm pretty sure he leads the team in doubles. You know, like this is a serious success story. And so you need, so not only those high upside guys that you're drafting in the first round, not only, you know, TJ Zoiks or whatever, you also need those deep, like the deep cuts from the draft. If you can turn those guys into solid major leaguers, whether to contribute to your team or to be assets to trade to leverage with other teams, it's important.
It is. I would think that Charrington would be in that inner circle of the Jays front office, and I would think that would happen basically from the get-go.
He basically slots in below Ross Atkins and Tony LaCava, or do you think he's on par with Tony right now?
Tony LaCava is the senior VP of baseball operations, for what that's worth, and I believe Charrington was brought in as the VP.
Right.
So,
but it's also part of like the Blue Jays just kind of like creating, you know, like this is kind of the new era of front offices now, where, you know, you go, the president is the number one guy, and then you just have like three or four guys who all have very similar roles beneath them.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the Dodgers way, in a way.
It is the Dodgers way. Yeah. So you have Shapiro, who's been a GM, Atkins, who is a GM, Charrington has been a GM, and then you have...
LaCava could have been a GM
exactly.
a few times.
He's passed up opportunities to be a GM. So I think that tells you something exactly about the way that front offices are expanding.
Yeah. I was blown away, actually, when I saw that during the game yesterday.
It's a big, they got benched, big pickup. Yeah. First reported by Shai Tabedi.
Yes, absolutely. Credit to Shai. Anything else we should touch on before we get out of here? Anything else about the Blue Jays?
What do you think happens this next week? Jesus. West Coast trip.
This is...
What's the tone of next week's ATL?
We'll find out. Credit to Stephen Brunt and Jeff Blair, who for weeks, I want to say since like the beginning of the month, have been saying that West Coast trip could make or break the season. Like that could be the place where we find out something about the Toronto Blue Jays. Lo and behold, here we are, this West Coast trip. If a 5-2 trip or a 2-5 trip pretty much are going to send the, you know what I mean? Like those are going to be very indicative. Of what
2-5 would be devastating.
Yes. Crippling almost.
Yeah.
5-2 would just, that would almost just keep the Blue Jays in it, in a way.
Yeah.
In a way. Like if they went 5-2 on this trip, they might not even be in first at the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
You think they definitely wouldn't be in first if they went 5-2?
No,
it's possible,
I mean,
that they could be.
Yeah, they could be. I just think that it gives you no guarantee.
No. Yeah, no, you need to go 5-2 on this trip. 2-5 would ruin it. So yeah, like credit to those guys. They were saying that West Coast trip, that's where it's going to happen, and that is where it's going to happen.
I think they take 3-4 against the Angels.
You better, if you're a Blue Jays fan, you better hope. I don't know. I did, like, just watch. My confidence in this team has been severely rattled just by the last 2 weeks of baseball that they've played.
Yeah.
You think they're going to be better? You would think they should be better.
That is what I think.
What do you think the trip will end up at in terms of wins and losses?
Either 4-3 or 5-2. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to, you know. Seattle is a better team. So, I think they take 3 against the Angels though,
and then
one or two against Seattle.
I think it might be a 3-4 trip, Ben.
Wow. Yeah. That's going to be tough to come back from.
That's going
to
be really tough.
Wow.
But if they go 3-4, they'll still be in that wild card mix.
Wow.
Like they could even still be in wild card position.
Sure.
3-4. That's not hitting. And if Josh Donaldson's not going to play, that's not going to help.
On next week's ATL, we will discuss.
We'll see. We'll see where we're at on next week's ATL. That's it for this week's ATL. My name's Arden Zwelling. I'm on Twitter. At Arden Zwelling. Ben Nixon Smith is on Twitter at BNixon Smith. Our producer Sam McKee is on Twitter at Sam A. McKee. Read us on sportsnet.ca. Watch us on Facebook Live and on web hits and on TV hits and all that.
The whole mix.
Yeah, just enjoy a little baseball. A little late night baseball. I love the late night baseball. I love it. I'm up all night all the time.
Yeah. Sometimes I end up dozing off before. I have to admit.
You might make it to the 6th or 7th.
Yeah, we'll see.
I will be wide awake throughout the entire thing and then listen to Jay's talk after.
That's it for us. We'll be back next week on At The Letters.